you know, you're such a good writer. I mean, some people were saying that. And he was saying that, no, this is just, you know, it's Allah sending this Quran through me. I am just the messenger. That's why I'm called, you know, like the messenger. I didn't create this for myself, and I'm just a regular human like you. So it's like a reflection. What she's doing is like a reflection of what the prophets used to do as well. So it's a very positive message that she's giving.
Yeah, Sayyid Abdullah, any comment here? Like, is this movie trying to portray and encourage these moral characteristics?
In a way, it is. It's, you know, it gives that good vibe that, you know, especially when she keeps trying to convince them that she's not the miracle worker here.
Yes,
it's all God's work, and says all of you could be God's work, and God will talk to one of you soon. That's what she gave them, that hope. So obviously, they passing that good message that, you know, it's not people that heal. You should not give too much respect to those who heal and try to worship them, because this is what a lot of people do.
Yes.
And subconsciously they become mushrikeen in their own mind, like, you know, like, oh, he can heal me. The reality is not he, it's Allah. And this is exactly what this little girl was trying to do. It's like, Allah, oh, God is the one who cures, not me. Keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, it's one of the good messages that this movie was trying to portray.
Okay, thank you. Let's take a listen to another part and take a short break, and we'll be back after this.
Is Sarah Hopkins a miracle worker?
It's about to turn her world upside down.
I don't think I can take this much excitement.
Yeah, hold on to your hat. There's going to be a lot more of it.
It's not possible. You're beginning to catch on.
Back to the program. Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We are still talking about or criticizing the movie The Girl Who Believes in Miracles, and hopefully finish it in this section of the episode. Brother Hussein, at the end of the movie, finally, the atheist doctor goes to church.
Yes.
This is what it ends with, right? And everything becomes hunky-dory. But life doesn't occasionally work that way to happily ever after, doesn't it?
Of course it doesn't. You know, it just so happened that this atheist doctor, you know, witnessed the girl who believed in miracles and who, you know, asked for God to you know, give her these miracles. But yeah, in real life, God expects you to do your research and, you know, arrive at that conclusion yourself, that, you know, you want to worship Him and that this is the right path for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sayyid Abdullah, did you want to talk about the part that near the end of the movie, again, we, you know, referred to it, in fact, in the last session, that at the lake, there is this ball of light, and then there's the shape-shifting of God into Jesus.
Yeah.
Would you talk about that part?
All right, so what they're trying to convey, basically, is that how grown-ups see Jesus is different how children see Jesus.
Mm.
So Jesus appeared to children in a more of an easy way that they can understand or they comfortable with to the eyes. So if someone comes with a shortened jeans, that's something they can, you know, could communicate with. It's like, oh, you know, that's just a cute guy.
Yeah. Like Santa Claus or something.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah. So, but if he comes,
it's so appealing to kids.
Yeah. So if he comes to her with his robe and with his hair and stuff, like, it's like, who's this guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to tell us that, yeah, God takes different forms, that He appears to kids.
Mm-hmm.
He's more appealing to kids.
Yes.
And they perceive Him that way. And then He came and she saw Him first in that scene,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of the movie, and the end of the movie, she saw Him in the same way that she saw Him first. But then God says to people, just in case you're wondering who's this guy with jeans, it's me. Surprise, and He just shifts. Like,
yes.
So, you know, just keep that in mind. It's me, Jesus.
Yes.
I'm just trying to make it easier for her to transit from this world to heaven.
Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you, both of you, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Hussein. This is the end of the program. Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, and we finished critiquing the movie The Girl Who Believes in Miracles. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And thank you very much for listening to the program Viewpoint. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witching.
I'm here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
America's annual inflation rate has hit a 30-year high amid the coronavirus pandemic, as well as a glitch in the country's supply chain. Supply chain disruptions across the country have been driving up prices and leading to a growing shortage of goods. Now, the government maintains hopes that the inflation could fall close to 2% by the end of 2022, yet a plethora of economic analysts find such a scenario very unlikely. U.S. officials are pinning their hopes on controlling the pandemic, which they believe is the main factor in controlling inflation gripping the U.S. today. The U.S. Federal Reserve is, meanwhile, shifting towards a tighter monetary policy to battle rising inflation amid supply chain snarl.
U.S. rising inflation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya, and in this episode, we'll try to investigate a topic that many are talking about in the U.S. media, inflation, why it is rising, who is to blame, and what can be done about it. In today's show, we'll be accompanied by economist, radio host, and author, Dr. Jack Rasmus. Our next guest, who will join us later in the program, is breakthrough news host Eugene Puryear. So do stay with us as we provide a clear and simple view of the complex economic problem that could only be solved via decisions by people high up in the power hierarchy, yet affect everyday Americans. Stay tuned.
As the inflation rages on, one often heard line of defense from the Biden administration is that the phenomenon of rising prices is a global issue. The U.S. president also blames inflation on the COVID-19 pandemic, which has indeed impacted the economy heavily worldwide.
Now, policymaking also plays a key role in the way that prices are rising, particularly because the gap between liberals and conservatives has been widening steadily since the race for the 2016 presidential election, out of which former President Donald Trump emerged victorious. With the current situation, there is little hope that inflation could be controlled anytime soon. U.S. inflation rate rose to over 7% over the last year to its highest point since 1982. So what is the reason for that?
There are two main reasons, I think, of why we have this inflation. One is supply chain or supply side. Supply chain means obviously for real goods coming in, you know, being imported in the U.S., we've got a supply chain problem going on. That's a global problem, not just the U.S. But the U.S. also has supply problems within its economy domestically, especially with trucking and transport and warehousing. In other words, getting the goods once they come into the port, or even if they're produced in the United States, getting them to the places where people actually buy them.
Regardless of who the average consumer blames for the rising consumer prices, the inflation is definitely creating a political liability for President Biden. Of course, factory shutdowns in Asia and overtaxed shipping routes are rendering a snarled supply chain, but the nation expects their Democratic leader to address the issue.
So a large number of economists agree that shutdowns and supply chain woes share some of the responsibility for rising prices. However, they still acknowledge that there must be more to the 40-year high inflation, leading many to come up with nothing more but poor management on the side of the U.S. government. So how could the rise of prices for goods and services affect the U.S. economy in the near future?
The rise in the prices of goods and services, it could have a huge effect in the near future for the U.S. economy. I mean, one major effect is, given the fact that it is making it more difficult for individuals to purchase daily goods, it could actually mean that consumption goes down. As people are struggling to buy what they normally buy, they will buy less of what they need, and certainly less of what they want, which actually means that sales will go down, which could cause a potential slump in the economy. And I think that is perhaps the biggest, you know, immediate danger, but I think there are a range of other dangers that are also out there. The Federal Reserve will almost certainly start to increase interest rates this year, and that will mean that there are many companies out there that have been, you know, riding on this free money, essentially, that the Federal Reserve is handing out to corporate America, that probably won't be able to pay their debts, and those debts will no longer be rolled over for many of them. So we could see companies start to collapse.
Inflation could really spin out of control and spread into other sectors. There are currently concerns about further inflation in petrol prices as crude oil prices also hit a 7-year high. As supply chains fail to keep up with supercharged demand in the U.S., officials are rushing to find a solution, but to no avail so far.
Since everything in the United States is produced for profit, whether it's a luxury good or whether it's something that you absolutely need to live, it's still being hit by the same supply chain issues. So the real responsibility here is the insatiable appetite for profit in corporate America, and the fact that we don't have a system that keeps stockpiles of crucial and important goods on hand, so if there are major disruptions, that people are still able to get what they need. So it's really a function of the corporate restructuring we've seen since the 1980s in the United States to drive up profits, but we're seeing it's very much at the expense of average everyday people.
Those in charge, whether in the federal government, White House, or Congress, need to put their differences aside and work together to address the dire economic situation. Although the country seems to be thousands of miles away from that scenario at the moment. Why does the U.S. have supply chain issues? Who is to blame? And which portions of the society are most affected by it?
Those most affected by inflation are the poorest, of course, on fixed incomes or with low wages that don't get adjusted very well. They're the ones that pay the price. Businesses can jack up their prices, as we know they're doing, and you know, wealthy people can move their investments around to protect themselves. But it's people on fixed incomes, retirees, 50 million people in the country on Social Security, and then, of course, people in lower wage segments of the economy are most impacted by it. Who's to blame? Well, you know, when this COVID hit globally, a lot of capitalist companies in transport, both shipping and transport and ground transport, mothballed a lot of their ships and the fleets you know, equipment and so forth. And then when they came out of it, you know, where are the workers?
Trillions of dollars have been injected into the economy during the coronavirus pandemic. Hence, a new wave of price increases is hitting U.S. consumers and businesses today. The initiative was aimed at controlling disrupted manufacturing worldwide, as well as global shortages of key materials. But has it been successful?
There's price gouging going on, on top of all that by businesses that can do it, that have monopoly positions. How long is it going to go on? A lot longer than they think, because this COVID great recession contraction has changed the economy structurally, fundamentally, both in labor markets and product markets, and soon we will see, as well, I believe, in the financial asset markets. It's going to continue at least through the middle of this year, maybe even later. You know, it's with us for some time.
Massive federal stimulus and new spending is often cited by the opposing Republicans as one major reason for current inflation. This is while President Joe Biden has clearly said that inflation has, quote, everything to do with the supply chain, unquote. So how has the supply chain affected the current inflation rate, and how long do you think it's going to last?
The supply chain issues, I think, have certainly had an effect. I don't know if it's the main effect, but it's certainly a major effect on the inflation issue, just because when there are a very limited number of goods and there's a marketplace where, you know, money speaks and there's no other form of allocation, no other form of planning to distribute necessary goods, then the price is going to go up as the people who hold the goods are going to sell to the highest bidder. So I think it's playing a pretty significant role in a number of different industries. And I think that certainly it could go on for some time. And I think it's unclear, because since you can't just, you know, build a new warehouse or build a new factory or change everything you do overnight, since the nature of how the supply chain is working is something that, you know, is going to, at least for the next few months, it seems to me, is something that's going to be very difficult to fix.
The inflation is adding salt to the injuries caused by the enduring pandemic and the messy economic recovery. High prices are indeed one of the country's biggest problems, as the government appears to be clueless on how to temper the pace of the U.S. consumer price growth. President Joe Biden, who the public views as the one responsible for the spike in prices, has shown little contrition for his handling of the economy.
The COVID and these other forces are related to each other and feeding off of each other, it's not totally congruent. They're not the same thing. But when COVID goes away here, abates a bit, we're still going to have the economic problems then.
Now, this all comes amid a serious decline in Joe Biden's popularity, a phenomenon seen steadily in nationwide polls. With the consumer price index increasing at its highest annual rate since 1982, the Biden administration officials keep boasting about their economic achievements, such as the Build Back Better initiative, which is still stuck in Congress. We asked Dr. Jack Rasmus what he thinks the partisan gap between Republicans and Democrats plays in the current economic situation in America.
What you got is the end of any kind of fiscal stimulus going on. The Build Back Better bill was shot down by corporate interests, both within the Republican and Democrat Party here. These interests do not want more social spending, program social spending, because in order to do that spending, you got to reverse some of the massive Trump tax cuts, Trump-era tax cuts, over $4 trillion in tax cuts in 2017, over 10 years, given to wealthy investors and corporations and bankers. That's the thing that they're protecting above all. That's why you can't get anything passed in terms of more social spending in Congress. Those interests have blocked everything.
The latest inflation wave is not unique to the United States, yet other major economies have seen much more modest spike in prices. If it continues, the inflation could indeed weaken the U.S. global empire and pave the way for new economic powers to aspire. The world's largest economy appears to be in tatters, and no specific roadmap seems to be ahead. The issue could most probably turn political in a year that the Republicans are hoping to gain power in Congress, both chambers of which are currently in control of the Democratic Party. Generally speaking, how is the Biden administration handling of the U.S. economy after almost a year into the Democratic president's tenure?
I think the Biden administration's handling of the current crisis has been, you know, mainly deficient. I think there's some elements that they've done that, you know, do move in the right direction. I mean, certainly the fact that they've been targeting the role of monopoly, at least rhetorically targeting the role of monopoly in rising prices, is, I think, you know, something that's both good and to some degree encouraging. But I think by and large, the Biden administration has shied away from making the moves, but even really diagnosing the problem correctly. We haven't seen them really deal in any way, shape, or form.
As always, there are two basic reasons for inflation to rise: supply and demand. While demand remains high in the U.S., disruptions in the supply chain mean the prices tend to increase. As a result, the demand for certain goods and services is greater than the economy's ability to meet those demands.
In the United States, most of the major industries are controlled by four or five, maybe six at most, companies, and they are using this opportunity of the pandemic in order to increase their prices and to use their monopoly power to gain more and more profits. But that's also driving up prices. They're deliberately driving up prices. And the third factor is the long-running policy by the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve in particular, to give huge trillions and trillions of dollars of money to Wall Street banks at very, very cheap rates, which has essentially started to debase the currency.
So while the inflation rate in 2020 was 1.23%, the following year it spiked to more than 7%. Now that's decreased the average consumer's purchasing power significantly. The status of weakened consumers could probably be captured best in a recent video showing looters raiding an Amazon delivery van during protests in Los Angeles.
Inflation is running pretty hot. You know, officially it's 7% CPI, but it's actually over 10% because CPI index does not really capture the full effect of inflation. The way it's going to affect the economy is already it will dampen down consumer spending, which is two-thirds of the economy. People will pay more in prices, won't be able to buy other things, and consumer spending will have a dampening effect on the first quarter recovery of the U.S. economy, which is already happening. We can see that.
Some believe that U.S. officials would have no solution to control the economy other than resorting to more than three interest rate increases in the year 2022. Policymaking could also open new door. However, the widening gap in U.S. Congress means stalling initiatives that help no one.
Differences between the two major parties are definitely playing a role in what we're seeing here, supply chain inflation. I mean, just the inability of the governments to really do much of anything as the two parties remain at odds mean that it's very difficult to actually promote any sort of policies that might ease the situation here. And I think certainly a lot of that can be laid at the doorstep of the Republicans. But I also think it is sort of a bipartisan reality that really goes back 30 or 40 years where these sort of the supply chain practices, the just-in-time production, were things that were promoted and hailed and facilitated by, you know, the political system in America, where the monetary policy of the Federal Reserve, which is playing a role here, has been 100% bipartisan the whole way. But I do think that the current gridlock is playing a huge role. And I think that, quite frankly, it means that there is a challenge in producing policy.
Now, lawmakers are solely working on partisan grounds with little care for the average consumers, who are the final victims of the current situation. Considering all factors, U.S. economy could take years to recover.
The supply chain issues in the United States should be laid squarely at the door of corporate America. And everything regarding supply chain issues comes down to something called just-in-time production. And so this is something that actually started earlier in the 1980s, really, in the auto industry. But now basically every major corporation that's selling anything in America from a store has essentially gone to this mode of dealing with their supply chain, where you don't want to have any sort of goods on hand in a big way. You essentially want to just have exactly what you need to sell, and you know they're managing who buys what, how much, so that technically it's supposed to be that there's just enough so that no one isn't able to find what they want, but not enough that there's any sort of backlog in a warehouse. Because the thought process is, the more goods you have waiting in a warehouse, the less likely they are to, if you have more goods than you need in a warehouse, then that means that ultimately you aren't able to make profit. And the easiest, the whole reason for capitalism exists, of course, is to make profit.
All right, peeps, it's time we check in with Abbas Mutaqim.
Peace, and welcome back to the show. You know, COVID had me down for a second, but I'm back, and I'm ready to get back to rocking with y'all. So today on Power to the People, we will examine capitalism and why inflation is always a part of the capitalist system. Capitalism is when a few people own and control all the means of production in a society. This means that in reality, there's only a few capitalists, and everyone else who doesn't own the means of production is subjected to capitalist exploitation. This is because everyone works for the capitalist, as the capitalist owns the product that's produced, as well as the company that produces the product. We then sell our labor to the capitalist for a wage or for a salary. And this has created a world where 8 men, 6 of whom are American, control half the wealth on the earth. It's a system where the corporations and their politician lackeys, they control the market and the prices of the goods that we consume every single day. And the natural part of capitalism is inflation. Inflation is when the price of goods rises within the macro level of the economy. It's when whoever is selling the goods decides to increase the price on the good, which then sends a chain reaction throughout the whole economy. Those who control the means of production, aka the capitalists, they control this entire phenomenon. An example of macro level goods that affect the economy is oil. Oil produces multiple different products, and corporations set the price of its worth, and then this affects the price on everything in which oil is used to produce. And this creates a ripple effect throughout the whole economy. We don't go buy oil from the source, we go to a corporate-owned gas station and buy gas for the price that these gas corporations and that the oil industry decides on what the price should be. These are all arbitrary numbers that these capitals make up so that they can make mass profits. If we look at the Rockefeller family, one of the richest families in the world, they sit in their house, they sit in their office, and they don't do anything to physically get the oil, yet they make billions in profit. And part of inflation in America is these corporations deliberately crashing the economy. The capitalists buy stock when it's low and sells the stocks when the market is high. Then they crash the market, and then they buy stocks when the market crashes, and this price of stock is once again cheap. They repeat this process over and over and over again and make massive profits. That is why it's not a matter of if the stock market will crash, it's a matter of when. And all of this affects the prices of everyday products and creates inflation. We also saw inflation happen through price gouging, which has been happening throughout this COVID-19 pandemic. As this virus infected people, there arose a need for masks, tests, medical equipment, and other goods. Those who make the masks and produce the equipment, oftentimes they decide to raise the price in order to make a higher profit. We saw countless examples of stores on Amazon selling COVID masks and tests at insane prices, when in reality, masks and tests should be given out for free to everyone because it's a public good. But that does not happen under capitalism, as profit drives everything under the capitalist system. Politicians, aka the ruling class, they also take advantage of this. Politicians, they knew the severity of the COVID-19 pandemic long before the general public did. And a minimum of 75 lawmakers, they invested their money in companies that had played a major role in the response to COVID-19. This allowed for politicians to get rich off of having insider knowledge and corporations to get rich because of the increased purchasing of stocks and the market rising. These politicians were worried about their own pocketbooks while stay-at-home orders were on the way and when the masses of people were about to deal with massive job loss and increased poverty. NFL lineman Tyler Crosby, he asked an important question. If as an NFL player we aren't allowed to bet on games, why are government officials allowed to buy stocks and stock options? This exposes the system for what it is. This whole market is rigged for the corporations and politicians. You can't pick yourself up by the bootstraps in a system that is controlled for them to win. The corporations and its politicians, they decide the prices of the market. We have no decision-making power. And this is the part of exploitation by capitalism. The system isn't controlled by the people, and it's instead controlled by the capitalists. Corporations can do whatever they want, when they want. They exploit the masses of people, no matter what the crisis is, whether it's a recovery from a natural disaster or a virus like COVID-19. If we want to put an end to inflation, we have to put an end to imperialist capitalism. Capitalism is why inflation happens, and we must understand this. This is power to the people.
In the worst case scenario, a House under the control of Republicans could end up in an impeachment effort against President Joe Biden. And that could further weaken his chances of re-election and prepare the grounds for the return of business mogul Donald Trump to power. Well, thank you for watching, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do make sure you tune in next week when we come back with another episode of We the People. Goodbye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Islamic Revolution versus Modern Era of Ignorance. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are in the 10 days dawn, the period marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The victory of the Islamic Revolution was a new voice and a new discourse across the world. The father of the revolution, late Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, roared against the modern Jahiliya, that is the era of ignorance, engulfing every aspect of government and daily life of the people. Jahiliya does not only mean ignorance, it rather means the era in which carnal desires overcome every affair in society and lead the individual and society to disobeying God's commands. The main Jahiliyyah took place in Hejaz, that is the Arabian Peninsula, preceding the prophethood of the Messenger of Mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. At that time, people had turned their back to the divine teachings of the previous prophets and insisted on idolatry and illogical tribal beliefs and customs. Humanity and ethics were in their nadir, while immorality, adamancy, tribal and group, fanaticism, haughtiness, self-conceit, disturbing others, violence, humiliation of women and girls, and all sorts of vices were rampant. A father would boast of burying his daughter alive. At this time, God sent his prophet Muhammad Mustafa, blessings of God upon him and his progeny.
verse 2 of chapter Jum'ah of the Noble Quran reads in this regard: It is God who sent to the unlettered people an apostle from among themselves to recite to them his signs, to purify them, and to teach them the book and wisdom, while earlier they had indeed been in manifest error. The Prophet of Islam created a government which was based on affection and love of fellow humans. He returned human dignity to people, especially women. However, Jahiliyyah is not restricted to the time of 14 centuries ago. Whenever human communities are deviated from the logical spiritual values, they have in fact indulged in Jahiliyyah, no matter if they deny it. Fourteen hundreds had passed since the great revolution of the Prophet of Islam, and the world had been plunged in diverse form of Jahiliyyah. Women had become playthings and the tools of pleasure for men. Bullies and oppressors had become the rulers of the world, and the poor and the weak had no chance of living in dignity and freedom. As in Iran, the Pahlavi royal family was ruling in full reverie and luxury, while countless cities and villages were deprived of the very necessities. The Shah claimed to be Muslim, whereas he had been installed by the British and supported by the Americans. He was absolutely dependent on the West, and the motto of his kingdom was to become Western from the head to the toe. The number of bars, brothels, discos, and centers of immorality was higher than libraries. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says, "There was propaganda to lead the people to immorality, promiscuity, and lechery. Even in the poor and backward regions, the places where people were in need of their first things, immorality and promiscuity were provided in a way. This was mainly intensified in places of the youth like universities and garrisons to busy and corrupt the generation. When the youth are corrupt, there will be no nation and no resistance will be seen." During the Pahlavi rule, the treasury of the country only belonged to the Shah, as if it were his personal account. Thus, he would generously spend to the American and British organizations and institutes to curry favor with his Western masters. Extravagant spending for royal ceremonies and purchase of many villas and apartments in the US and Europe were just part of the squandering of national money by the Shah and his family. Suddenly, a descendant of the Prophet of Islam, Ruhollah Musavi Khomeini, staged his unmatched revolution and said that the Shah should go and an Islamic government with people's votes should replace it. The Imam, in his first public speech, likened Muhammad Reza Shah rule to that of the Umayyad regime and Yazid. He asked people to be vigilant and advised the Shah to give up servility to the Western and Eastern colonialist and the usurper-fabricated regime of Israel. These fiery words not only didn't affect the tyrannical Shah, but also he suppressed the people in cold blood. Many young people were martyred in demonstrations in the cities, but the flames of the revolution swept across the country. Imam Khomeini guided the people from exile, and the Shah had to flee the country scandalously. The Imam returned home from exile, and the Islamic Revolution triumphed despite the enemies of Islam and Iran. In less than 2 months after this victory, the Islamic Republic system of government was established with people's massive turnout. In other words, over 90% of the people took to the ballot boxes and 98.2% of the population voted to the Islamic Republic. The ideas of Imam Khomeini had their roots in the Quran and the instructions of Prophet Muhammad and his infallible progeny, blessings of God upon them. The Imam was very highly charismatic and, like the divine prophets, staged his uprising for promotion of God's commands. He put forward religious popular rule as the method of Islamic rule in the modern world. His ideology strongly challenged Western humanism and Eastern socialism as the two main powers of the time. The Islamic Revolution has firmly stood against deviant currents and new narratives from Islam, such as Wahhabism and American Islam, on the one hand, and the Western culture on the other hand. The modern Jahiliya, or era of ignorance, however, it still tries to keep its clutches on the entire world by hook or by crook. Today, those governments which masquerade as the flag bearers of development and progress are indeed annihilating democracy, human rights, and the beliefs of dependent nations all over the world. Palestine has been occupied by the child-killing Israeli regime for over 7 decades. This happens in utter silence of the international organizations and bodies, particularly the United Nations, whose very existence is to defend the defenseless and support the weak in the world. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "What the political apparatuses are propagating today is the very Jahiliya which the Prophet of Islam was sent to remove it from the human life. The signs of that very Jahiliya can be seen today in the world in the prevalent corrupt Western civilization. The same injustice, the same discrimination, the same overlooking the human dignity, the same bolding of sexual issues and sexual needs. One of the signs of the first Jahiliya is the female display of phyny. Today, one of the main displays of the Western civilization is this very display. This is the same Jahiliya, but the Jahiliya which has managed to get equipped with the weapon of modern propaganda to conceal realities from people's eyes. We Muslims should understand these. We should know these."
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you,
like you,
in everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you, Rasulullah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. You're welcome to Like Muhammad with me, Javed Akbari. There are important lessons we can learn from the life of the Prophet. What we mean by the life of the Prophet is seerah of the Prophet, or the normative conduct of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. Well, brothers and sisters, when the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, proclaimed the religion of Islam in Medina, there was a guy or a man named Abdullah bin Ubay who was extremely jealous. Each time he met the Prophet, he was actually green with envy because he could not tolerate or he could not see the Prophet be so popular and so respected by the people in Medina. So he had an idea or a plan in his mind. He resorted to a conspiracy, and of course he dug a pit in his house and erected poison coated knives and lenses around the house. And of course he covered all of them by a thick mat, and he also tied one side of the carpet to a wall so that when the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his companions arrived, they would fall in that pit. He also hid some of his evil-minded companions armed with swords so that when the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family, as well as Ali alayhi salatu wasalam and other companions came out, they might be attacked and killed. So it was a conspiracy hatched by Abdullah bin Ubay. Abdullah bin Ubay also prepared poisoned food so that if the first plan probably failed, they may be finished by the poisoned food. That was a conspiracy hatched and worked out by Abdullah bin Ubay because he was an enemy of the Prophet, peace be upon him. Finally, he went and invited the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his close companions for the feast. And the Almighty Allah, through angel Gabriel, informed the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, about all these evil plans. Gabriel advised the Prophet to sit where the mischief maker Abdullah bin Ubay might suggest, and also to eat the food offered by him so that this miracle might be observed by them all quite clearly. And this miracle has been documented, has been recorded in different sources. It's a well-known miracle recorded in both Shia and Sunni sources.
My heart is so full of longing. I wish to be close to my beloved. I dream to walk in the streets of Medina and to quench the thirst of my spirit by visiting you, O Muhammad.
Now, to further explain and also narrate what happened to the miracle and what was the consequences of this feast that Abdullah bin Ubay wanted to give to the Prophet. The Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family went to that man's house with his companions and sat on the carpet prepared by him. They remained safe because Allah had hardened the carpet and the ground beneath it became stony and leveled. The hypocrites were amazed beyond measure seeing this. Then he put the poisoned food before his guests. His guests were the Prophet, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, and some of the Prophet's companions. Now, before extending his holy hand to the food, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family asked Ali alayhi salatu wasalam to recite these words as he himself recited. So what was this dua that the Prophet asked Ali to recite? He said to him to recite this dua: Bismillahi Shafi, Bismillahi Al-Kafi, Bismillahi Al-Mu'afi, Bismillahi Alladhi La Yadhurru Ma'a Ismihi Shay' Wa La Da'un Fil Ardi Wa La Fis Sama'i Wa Huwa As-Sami'u Al-Alim. This was the dua that the Prophet taught Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam to recite so that the poisoned food would not have a negative effect on his health. Now, what is the translation of this dua? Bismillahi Shafi, in the name of Allah the Beneficent, the Merciful. In the name of Allah, Bismillahi Shafi, the Healer. In the name of Allah, the Sufficient, Bismillahi Al-Kafi. In the name of Allah, the Protector, Bismillahi Al-Mu'afi, the Protector. In the name of one after taking whose name nothing and no pain can harm, Bismillahi Alladhi La Yadhurru Ma'a Ismihi Shay' Fil Ardi Wa La Fis Sama', neither on earth nor in the sky, and he is the hearer, the knower. Wa huwa as-sami'u al-alim. So this was the dua that the Prophet of Islam taught the Commander of Faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam to recite before eating the poisoned food. And what happened? All of the guests, including the Prophet and Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, and the Prophet's companions, ate the food. got satisfied and returned hale and hearty.
فجرا جئت بعد العسر يسرا ربنا أعلاك قدرا يا إمام الأنبياء يا حبيبي يا محمد يا نبي سلام عليك يا رسول سلام عليك يا حبيب سلام عليك صلوات الله عليك.
When the companions of Abdullah bin Ubay saw this, they thought that perhaps he had forgotten to poison the remaining food. So they poisoned it. His daughter, who had prepared all these plans, saw that the mouth of that pit had been closed because the pit had been leveled and that it had become hard like the ground she herself sat on. But when she sat, Almighty Allah reverted that to its earlier condition, and that cursed woman fell down into it and died. And the inmates of that house began to weep and cry in grief. Now, at the time of Abdullah bin Ubay, the mischievous fellow warned the people of his house and ordered them not to say that she died after falling in the pit. Otherwise, they will be disgraced and Muhammad will know that it was all due to their conspiracy. So, everyone in the family was informed, and Abdullah bin Ubay never wanted this conspiracy to be revealed to other people and this, you know, plot to be known, because it would end up in his disgrace. So they were weeping, the family members were weeping and saying, the bride for whose marriage this feast was arranged has died. This was their saying, and this was their pretext, and they continuously saying to the people. So, and all who ate that leftover food also died. And that's the point, you know. When Abdullah bin Ubay came to the Prophet asked the cause of that girl's death. Abdullah bin Ubay then replied that the girl fell down fatally from the upper floor of the house, and all who ate died due to the overeating. So this was the excuse brought up by Abdullah bin Ubay. And of course the Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him and his family, knew very well what the story behind their death. He knew beforehand what the plot was for and what the conspiracy was intended for. So the conspirators did not reveal the true cause of the conspiracy and the true cause of the death of those people who died, the leftover food and the woman who fell into the pit to her death. So this story has been narrated by different narrators as a miracle of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. And that's all for this session. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad. Shafi'ullah, Habibullah, Nabiullah, Rasulullah, Khalilullah, the friend Allah, Ya Rasulullah,
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAT 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.